Mitzvah Shin Ayin Zayin 377. Mitzvah Giluach HaNozer VaHavas Karbonosav. That when the Nazir comes to the termination of his Nazirus period, he has to shave his head and bring certain Karbonos in order to terminate the status. Shigaleach HaNozer Saruv Yavi Karbonos Kishayashlim Nazirus. So that when he gets to the end, he has to do these things. V'chein Kishayitame. And the same thing applies, different Karbonos. So you don't have all the exact same procedure when he becomes tummy and therefore has to restart his Nazirus, but you have the shaving that has to be done at that time and different korbanos of birds that have to be brought at that time. But the idea that he has to shave and bring korbanos is the same whether he's just naturally concluding the period that he took on for his Nazirus or he had to restart it because he became tummy. Shenemar, etc. The basic procedure is given explicitly in the Chumash. Amr b'Sifra, the Lachik Medrash says, Shlosha megalchin v'tiglachton mitzvah. There are three people whose shaving is a mitzvah. Hanozer v'hamitzora, someone recovering from tzaras, which we discussed in Sefer Vayikra. V'halevim, and this was only in the desert, in the Midbar. So one, the Levium were consecrated through a procedure of shaving their entire bodies, but that's not done in the future. That's the future regarding the speaking as if we were in the times of Matan Torah. That was only done that once in the Midbar, which Harry could be very thankful for. So Ve'ulam Shlosha Eile Einam Shavim L'chol Divrehem. That these three are not completely equivalent. Again, the Levium were just the once, but the Nazir and the Mitzora is for all time. That any time a Nazir and a Mitzora are concluding their Nazirus or their Tzaras, they have to undergo the shaving. That you could say, well, the two different types of shaving for the Nazir. There's one when he has to restart the Nazirus because he became Tameh, and there's one when he naturally concluded the Nazirus period that he accepted upon himself. So maybe it should be two separate mitzvos. Why am I only counting? You know, sometimes we have two separate mitzvos for seemingly trivial things, and here you're lumping everything together. All the korbanos of the Tumah and the Tara and the shaving of the Tumah and the Tara is all one mitzvah. Now, when the Nazir interrupts his Nazirus or concludes the Nazirus, then he has to follow this procedure. Why is it? Why is this all lumped together? Lefisha inyan giluach hatuma eino mitzvah bifnei atzma klal. The reason is that the shaving when he becomes tummy, when he interrupts the Nazirus, is not its own mitzvah at all. Ela din midine mitzvah sa Nazirus hu shebir akosuv. It's not a separate mitzvah. It's a detail of the laws of the Nazir. Like, the Rambam doesn't count, you know, administering the penalty for mitzvahs. You know, you could get, well, maybe it's separate mitzvahs. If you eat pork, and that's prohibited. That's one mitzvah. And then there's a mitzvah on the Bezdin to give malchus to someone who eats pork. So no, they're not separate mitzvahs. It's just one of the rules surrounding the eating of pork is that you get malchus for it. So here, this isn't a separate mitzvah, but rather it's one of the details of the rules surrounding the Nazir, that when he interrupts the Nazirus, he has to shave his head, wait 30 days, and continue the Nazirus again. A lot of rules in the Torah. And the Gemara says that there's 613 mitzvos. Yeah. So if you have to fit all the rules in the Torah into 613 mitzvos, you have to be a little bit creative which ones are lumped together and which ones are separate. That's why everybody has separate counts. The Rambam has a separate count. The Ramban has a separate count. The Bahag has a separate count. Or Sajagon has a separate count. Everybody has separate counts because you have to be creative with the reasoning. So, so the mitzvah also has two shavings, one at the right when he concludes, and right one when he finishes bringing all the karbonos. The mitzvah achas, v'achar she'ein ze'ikar ha'mitzvah, eladin midinei ha'mein roi limnoso mitzvah bifnei atzma, So he explains his principles in the Sefer HaMitzvos in the seventh introductory essay explaining the principles of how you count the mitzvos. And again, what we call Parsha Mesorah, mitzvah say beis. Because that's the gamgim b'shem Rav Zichron Avrocha. Mahi asibam noso tiglachas nazir v'karbanoso mitzvachas v'tiglachas mitzorven v'karbanoso shtei mitzvos v'sham tirenim v'vorim tirtzelim lulmod. But you're going to ask a question on me that both of the shavings of a mitzvah are one mitzvah, and what are two mitzvos by the nazir? Are the shavings and the bringing of the karbanos? So those the Rambam counted as two mitzvos. One, the shaving of the mitzorah, and one, the bringing of the karbanos of the mitzorah. But here, by the Nazir, he lumped everything together. The shaving and the karbanos are all one mitzvah, so why? The answer is, says the Sefer HaChinuch over there in Parshas Mitzorah, which I'm sure you all remember, but we'll go over again just for those who might not. So the answer is that by the mitzorah, the shaving and the korbanos accomplish two different tasks. By the mitzorah, the shaving is part of what causes the mitzorah to cease conveying the tumah that's associated with being a mitzorah, with having tzaras. The korban has absolutely nothing to do with ceasing, with stopping his status of being Tomei. Mm-hmm. The Karbanos simply allow him to go into the Beis HaMikdash. They can accomplish two completely separate tasks, which is not the case by the Nazir. By the Nazir, there's no restriction on the Nazir going into the Beis HaMikdash at all, ever. Unless he's Tomei with something that anybody else wouldn't be allowed to go into the Beis HaMikdash. The Karbanos and the shaving both serve the same function, which is to conclude the status of being a Nazir. That's why the Rambam counted over here the Nazir both as one mitzvah, but by the mitzorah as two mitzvos. Mishor shei mitzvah zo shel giluach kol haseyar bimlos yemei nazirus vavas korbanoso gazavdi bichlal shorish hamitzvah kodemes mashiadati. I explained in the last mitzvah, and it wasn't the last mitzvah in our order, but it was discussing how the Nazir has to, again, go to extreme, so he has to cut off all his hair after it's been he's been growing his hair so long, etc. Midini HaMitzvah, Masha'am Zichron Lebracha, Heichan Migaleach Sara. Where does the Nazir get his hair cut? Be'ezras Nashim. No?
187.
Maybe he's Yotzi B'Dievet, as we'll see in a second, but Lechatchila, the place where he's supposed to cut, the hair is in the outer courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, called the Ezra's Nashim, because that's where all Jews were allowed to go in, men and women. So
all Jews could go to the Ezra's Nashim.
Right. Okay. Goyim were not allowed into the Ezra's Nashim. They were only allowed in the area outside the actual... This is where the Ezra's Nashim was, where the actual precincts of the Beis HaMikdash proper began, as opposed to what we call the Har HaBayis, the Temple Mount, where even Goyim were allowed to... we're allowed to go in, as I'm very fond of pointing out. My favorite archaeological finding in all of history is they found signs in Greek that were placed on the outside of the Ezra's Nashim, saying only Jews are allowed past this point. Anyway, the Lishkas and the Zirim Haisa Sham beKeren Dromis Mizrachis v'Sham Mevashlim Shameinu Mashlichin Saren Leish. So it was a special room that was called the Nazir room. So that was the place where they used to have the haircuts, and they used to cook the shlamim. So the shlamim are the least severe of the korbanos that a Nazir has to bring. On the conclusion, there's an ola and a chatas and a shlamim. So the olam is obviously consumed completely on the altar. The chatas is eaten only by the kohanim, and the shlamim is the one that could be eaten by anyone in Yerushalayim. So they used to cook the least holy of the korbanos of the Nazir in this room called the Lishkas Nazirim. And they used to make a little fire under the pot that they were cooking the shlamim in. And what did they use to feed the fire?
The hair.
The hair.
Ooh, that's awful.
Stink.
Help you covered up the pot.
Well, you could cook more fuel, obviously. It's not just the hair, but you include it in the fire that they cook the shlamim.
It's like the Hindu ladies do at night.
Oh, yeah. Havdal. The other issue with the sheitels, the Avodah Zarah issue. So that's the place where they cook it and they give him the haircut and they put his hair on the fire to serve as a fuel. V'im gileach b'medina yatsa. However, if the Nazir did his haircut outside the base of Mikdash, that's also okay b'diavad. U'v'chol mokom shemegaleach tachas adud mashlich sarah. But you're supposed to save your hair no matter where you get the haircut and throw it under the fire, under the pot.
To be buried with it.
That's a mercy. To be buried with it.
I don't know.
Yeah, when it was, but those saving the body parts to be buried with someone only applies to.
Limbs.
Well, okay, if it's a limb, yes, but if it's something, but if it's hair and nails, that only applies to hair and nails that are attached to the person when he or she dies.
Okay, take it back.
So, but the hair does get buried if it's a tiglachas tuma. That here we're talking about tiglachas tara, that he had natural conclusion. But if it's an interruption in the nazirus,
right.
So the hair does get buried.
Oh.
Because it's not, then there's no shlomim at that point. Ve'enu migaleach ad shei pesach hazara pasuach. You can only conduct the shaving when the doors of the azara of the Beis HaMikdash are open. Shenemar, Pesach Ohel Moed. It says in the Chumash that the Nazir should shave at the entrance to the tent of meeting, the entrance to the Mishkan. Meaning you would, what you would think that means is you stand at the doors of the Beis HaMikdash and you shave there. But the Chazal tells it doesn't literally mean that. It means that would be a disgrace to the Beis HaMikdash that people getting haircuts right in the middle of everyone coming to bring their karbanos. So it just means that it's at a time that the doors are open, not literally by the open doors. If a nazir has no hair, then he does not have to just take a razor and pass it over his head.
You mean if he's bald?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Can he even be a nazir if he's bald?
Yeah, you're not allowed to cut your hair. There's no, again, you have to let your hair grow, but if you have no hair to let grow.
But you also don't drink wine and stuff.
Right. So then you could be a nazir. This is actually a machlokas in the Mishnayos that not everybody agrees with this. But anyway, this is how the Rambam paskins that if a nazir has no hair, then he does not have to shave. Again, you're not talking about somebody who is partially bald. You're talking about somebody who's completely bald. Somebody who's partially bald still has some hair to shave. But if he has literally zero hair.
He has to let his beard grow also.
So, that part of the ceremony also, of the conclusion of the Nazir, is that you take Hazeroa b'sheila min ha'ayil, it says in the Chumash, that you take the arm, the foreleg, from the shlamim after it's cooked, and you bring that with part of the meal offering that the nazir has to bring. So you take both of them together, and then he has to wave it, you know, make the like a lulav, he has to shake it. So that's part of the procedure. So you might think, well, if the nazir has no arms and he can't shake thing, so maybe he can never terminate his nazir status. So it says no, that if you bring the karbanos, so the waving is not an essentially integral part of the ceremony, that's only the mitzvah, and if you did not perform the waving, either because you had no arms, you just neglected to perform the waving, the nazir status would in fact be terminated.
Make somebody
the shliach. It doesn't work. Shlichas doesn't work for this type of thing. That's also the source, by the way, the Gemara in Chulin talks about how this is the source for the concept of bittul b'shishim. That the forearm of the korban of the nazir is holy and is not allowed to be eaten, but the rest of the korban is allowed to be eaten. So it says that the zeroa regarding the rest of the animal in this case is 1 in 60. That's why having it cooked together does not create a problem that it asters the entire rest of the animal from being eaten, like the forearm, which is used as a korban. So you never know when you dig stuff up. You may think, you know, nazir, that's never relevant. I'm never going to be a nazir. And, you know, this is only applicable on the base of Mikdash anyway, but there are practical applications sometimes to surprising areas of the Torah. Ba'afilu yeshlo se'ar mikevan shevi korbanosav ava bishelo gileach ena tiglachas makeves v'shoso mitame la'erev. So also the shaving is also does not serve to terminate the nazir status. It's only the bringing of the korbanos that serve to terminate the nazir status. So the shaving is a mitzvah. You have to do it, but it's not ma'akev, that it doesn't prevent the nazir status from being terminated.
Right, as long as that, though, obviously you can't bring the korban. So yeah.
Right. That's why your wife pointed out that Rabbi David Cohen was a permanent nazir because he had no way of terminating his nazir status. Yeah.
Wait a minute.
No.
Ooh.
Nope. The Mishan Izrak
Olav
Echad
Min
Hadami Mikorbanosav Hutar Afal Pi Shelo Nasan Al Kapav Velo Enif. As soon as the blood from the korban was sprinkled on the altar, so then he is now permitted to become tummy and to drink wine. Shigoladvarim Ha'ila, the mitzvah Velolikov. Let's say you've neglected to shave your head after for a very long time after you brought the korbanos. Nevertheless, it's still a mitzvah to do so. So if you shaved your head, even if it was all the way down to the you know, as close as you could get with scissors, then you would not be yotzi. It has to specifically be a razor. Or if you shaved the razor and you left two hairs, again, that were longer than being able to be folded. I mean, to be folded over, right? So you did not fulfill the mitzvah of shaving, and you have to shave again. So what does that mean? If you took an electric shaver, assuming electric shaver has the status of has the status of scissors. So if you take an electric shaver and you shave your entire head, and you bring all your hair to the kohen, the cook, your shlamim, and the kohen says, "Why are you holding an electric shaver?" "Oh, of course, that's what I used to shave my head, of course." So the kohen says, "No, you're not yotze. You have to use a real razor." "Ah." So you have to wait 30 days, and you have to do it again. You have to let your hair grow in 30 days and do it again. Okay.
And do all the other things.
No, the shit. No, not nothing like that. Just there.
What happens to the head you just cut? You can't sew it under the
fire. Yeah, it could do whatever. It has because it didn't fulfill the mitzvah with it, so it has no kedusha at all.
So
gileach al hashlamim v'nimtze pasul tiglachto psula uzvachav lo alulo. So let's say you perform the shaving before you did the shlamim, and then the shlamim you became pasul. Let's say the blood got spilled out, so it couldn't be sprinkled on the altar or something like that. So then the korban doesn't work, and also you have to do shaving again. So gileach al shloshes habehemos shumakri venim says achas man kshera. So, but if you did the shaving before all three, then as long as one of them was found to be kosher, then it's good. So tiglach tokshera v'yavi sharizvachim v'yikarvu kilchasan, and that they should be sacrificed properly. Shalosh behemos elu she'amarinu him keves le'ola v'chav selachatos v'ayel l'shlamim. So the three korbanos of the nazir are a sheep for the ola, and a female sheep for the chatos, and a ram for the shlamim, which is again the least holy one that could be eaten. Umevi im ha'ayel shisha esronos u'shnei shlishis esron solas vofem en esrim chalos. And with the ram you bring 6 2/3 isaron of flour, fine flour, and you bake 20 loaves. V'yeser pratev maseches nozer, it's all explained in maseches nozer, v'noheges bizman habayis bizchar menekevos. It's in the times of the Beis HaMikdash for males and females. What's the shear? How does he calculate it? I'm sure Art Scroll, the 6 2/3 isaron.
Between 10.5 and 18 cups of flour.
Okay, not so much. The overall zeh velo gileach, o she gileach belotar, o she gileach v'shir sheistaros, you bital say. You neglected to perform a positive commandment if you just didn't shave at all, or you shaved with something other than a razor, or you shaved with a razor and you left two hairs. Bital say. Aval shir achas levada ein mitzvah misbateles v'shvil seyar achas. Afilu gileach v'shir shtei sairos v'acharkach nosher achas men me'atzma im gileach acheres apabish seyar ein kan.
שהרי שר האחס אינה חשוב עשר כמו שמרנו, מצווס גילוך יש כאן, בלי שכבר גילך כל ראש שחוץ מן השתיים. Okay, this is a little... Well, I should have stopped earlier in the sentence. I have to now explain what's going on. So if you shaved all your head and you left only one hair, then you fulfilled the mitzvah of giluach, because one hair isn't considered a really significant amount of hair. And even if you shaved all your head except two, and that we know is no good, and one fell out of its own accord, and then you shave the other one, that's also good.
Did that.
So if you had two left, one fell out, and then you shaved the other one. So since one is insignificant, so then you finish the shaving besides one hair total, so then that's good. Even before the shaving, he's now allowed to become tamei to dead bodies and drink wine. Havas ha-korbanos me'akeves ha-kol. The bringing of the karbanos prevents him from becoming un-nazirified. So you neglected to perform this commandment to bring the karbanos at the proper time when you conclude the naziros, and you would not be allowed to drink wine or become tamei until you bring them. Even again, so the shaving is neither here nor there. You can shave all you want; it doesn't stop your naziros. It is just a separate mitzvah, ideally lechatchila, that you're supposed to do, but it does not affect your nazir status in any way, unless, of course, you're still within the time of the naziros, then you would have to restart because you wouldn't have the mitzvah to shave it all yet. Okay. We can take a deep breath, and now we can do something that is applicable nowadays to all of us, at least being the recipients of this mitzvah, if not the performers of this mitzvah. Mitzvah Shin Ayin Ches 378 Mitzvahs Birkas Kohanim Bechol Yom, that the priests should bestow the priestly blessing daily. Okay, shouldn't it stop?
Lawrence, right?
Daily. So let's read the first sentence, then we can talk about the daily. Shin Estavu HaKohanim Shivarchu Yisrael Bechol Yom. The Torah says that the Kohanim should bless the Jewish people daily. Shenemar kosev archu es b'nei Yisrael amor lahem. Thus shall you bless the children of Israel, say unto them. Now, does it say in the Torah that the Birkas Kohanim has to be daily, explicitly? No. So how do you know when should it be done? When should it be done? The assumption is it should be done daily, but the truth is that a Kohen does not neglect to do this commandment unless he's called and doesn't go up to do it.
Uh-huh.
So the Kohen is not considered to have dispensed with this mitzvah if he just doesn't actively seek out to perform Birkas Kohanim. But basically, on a fundamental level, since there's an opportunity to do so every day, so the Birkas Kohanim is supposed to be done every day. So before we even get to the mitzvah, since, you know, it was already in the title, this was glaring at us. Mm-hmm. So who here heard Birkas Kohanim this morning? No one. Okay.
Only
Sfardim. Sfardim Beis Medrash NYU. Sfardim. So Ashkenazim only do Birkas Kohanim on Yontif. Not what?
In America.
Right. So why? Where does it say that you should only do Birkas Kohanim on Yontif? You do. Okay, we'll get to the Shabbos in a second. We'll get to the Shabbos.
Okay. You're supposed to be happy and you cannot be possibly happy.
Excellent.
In Chutzlaut.
Yeah. So fundamentally, yes, the mitzvah is supposed to be done every day, but at a certain point in Ashkenazi communities, we developed the practice that we only do Birkas Kohanim on Yontif. So people are searching for why. In Halacha it says the Birkas Kohanim is supposed to be done every day. So why would Ashkenazim do it only on Yontif? So a few reasons. One, Rabbi Tzvi Reichman suggested that the Ramah says in Shulchan Aruch, is that Birkas Kohanim is supposed to be done when people are happy. It's supposed to be done out of the mitzvah. It's supposed to be done out of simcha, as the blessing of the on that the Kohanim recite before they recite Birkas Kohanim.
V'tzivanu levarech es ha'amo Yisrael be'ahava, love, you know, when people are eating and drinking and happy, so there's more love going around, so therefore the Birkas Kohanim should be done only when people are actively happy, which is on Yontif. Others suggest that the reason that Birkas Kohanim was only done on Yontif is because the Kohanim had the hakpada, even though it doesn't say in Halacha that they have to do this, but the Kohanim had the practice that they will go to the mikvah. They wouldn't say Birkas Kohanim unless they had been to the mikvah.
That's so, everywhere?
No, most Kohanim don't do this nowadays. Some maybe still do, but at a certain point in history, the Kohanim would only say Birkas Kohanim if they'd gone to the mikvah. So the Yontif was a time that people went to the mikvah. There's a mitzvah, L'tahir Atzmo Baregel. So it's technically to become tahor for the holidays. So technically this applies really in the base of Mikdash, because you're supposed to be able to participate in all the korbanos, but some poskim suggest that it's proper to do something reminiscent of what was done in times of base of Mikdash, so therefore people should go to the mikvah before Yontif. That's why, you know, you have, with terms of men's mikvahs, so you have different levels. You have certain chassidim who go to the mikvah every day. I'm not talking about people who are makpid on Tfilas Ezra to go to the mikvah after a seminal mission, which is a different thing, but some chassidim go to the mikvah every day. Some people have adopted, you know, it's become more popular in non-chassidic circles to go to the mikvah Erev Shabbos. So again, apparently Arizal like to go to the mikvah Erev Shabbos, and then the practice started to spread, even though in Halacha doesn't say anywhere that you're supposed to go to the mikvah Erev Shabbos. And then you have, as we get less and less chassidish, so then you have some people who go to the mikvah before every Yontif, and then, yeah?
Is this mostly guys?
Yeah, for women, technically it should apply to women also, but we never heard of women doing this, except there are people there are women who go Erev Yom Kippur especially. It's, there are people who say women are supposed to go, even then the common practice is not. So then you have the people who go on Yontif, and then you have the people who go Erev Rosh Hashanah, Erev Yom Kippur, and then you have the most misnagdish Litvisha people who go only Erev Yom Kippur once a year to the mikvah for men. Okay, so then, apparently at a certain time the practice was that people were going before Yontif, every Yontif, so then the Kohanim we're going to be tahor, and they will be in a position to fulfill the sakpada to go to the mikvah before reciting Birkas Kohanim. So, again, these reasons are, you know, somewhat difficult, but nevertheless, the Ashkenazi minhag is that we only do Birkas Kohanim and Yontif. And then you have another controversy within the Ashkenazi community that there were some places that did not do Birkas Kohanim and Yontif when it fell on Shabbos. Why? You're going to reduce it even more? Well, less Birkas Kohanim? We already are limited to so few days a year, but why not do Birkas Kohanim when it fell on Shabbos? And the story is told that Rav Soloveitchik, when he first came to America, he was the Rav in Boston. So the first Yontif that he was there that fell on Shabbos, he saw that the Kohanim weren't going up to do Birkas Kohanim. So he said, what's this? Oh no, our minhag is that we don't do Birkas Kohanim on Shabbos. So he started screaming at them, it's ridiculous, it makes no sense.
He got fired.
It makes no sense. So he said he got them eventually, he managed to force them to go do Birkas Kohanim on Shabbos, but the next day they fired him. Okay, so he says, so he's telling all the young rabbis that you have to take caution at how much you want to change the practices in your congregation, because you might be fired. So why? What reason could there possibly be? We had a hard enough time trying to search for reasons to do Birkas Kohanim only on Yontif. What reason could there possibly be to do not to do it on Shabbos?
You have these bakashos that you sort of supposed to sit, you know, think to yourself in the middle of it, and you shouldn't say those on Shabbos.
Yeah, but we omit those.
All right.
Well, that's why there's the long tune is not done on Shabbos. It's just no singing.
No chance to do it.
No IAI. So maybe you're right. Gezeira Atu, that maybe somebody would have by mistake recite the Bakoshos on Shabbos. Some people say you're not even allowed to recite the Bakoshos on Yontif. If only going.
You make Mishaberachs for sick people on Shabbos. That's not a Bakosha. I don't know what it is.
You're only supposed to make Mishaberachs for sick people on Shabbos that are critically ill. Yeah.
You are.
Yeah.
I thought. I mean, they often.
Yeah, but people are sometimes a little bit more liberal with whom they mention in Mishaberach for Cholim on Shabbos than they really should. But okay, so that's So that's you're welcome to daven for non-critically ill people on weekdays all you want, but really a Shabbos should be reserved for people who are really critically ill.
Why is it that that's the first time I've heard this? Hmm? I should have picked this up sooner.
Oh, really? It's been discussed on our show for years.
About critically...
How you should really limit it.
Yeah. Critically.
And dry walk was always a big...
Really?
Well, we had also had about 5 minutes worth of names, you know, and so finally it became obvious that, look, the same names every Shabbos for months, and so we figured, like, can't be that critically
ill. Well, unless they're really on a respirator.
Well, whatever.
Right, but, critically ill means there's a chance they're going to die on Shabbos.
Yeah.
That's what
that's pretty critical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some people who are Rabbi Block, I think he said, chronically ill, not critically ill. It could be they're going, you know, it could be they're terminally ill. It could be they're going to die in 3 months, but that's not critically ill.
Well, but if they're
anyway, so that's the story. So what reason could there be for not saying Birkas Kohanim on Yontif when it falls on Shabbos? So some suggest that the reason is that on Shabbos you have mitzvahs ona that. The Kohen, I think there were also some places where they only allowed married Kohanim to Duchen. I think there were some places like that also. Anyway, but you have mitzvah sona, so even if the Kohen went to the mikvah Erev Yontif, so the mikvah is going to become undone on the night of Shabbos when he's together with his wife. So then he's not going to have this hakpada anymore to go to the mikvah before to perform Birkas Kohanim. So therefore, they just did away completely with Birkas Kohanim when it fell on Shabbos.
Oh, that's...
So there are a couple problems with this. One problem is you could go to the mikvah again Yontif morning. That way, generally, we try to avoid going to mikvah Shabbos Yontif when not necessary, but it's all discussion. But according to strict halacha, it is allowed, so maybe you should go to the mikvah on Shabbos morning. It's open. Men's mikvahs are usually open on Shabbos morning. And the other problem with that is the mitzvah's ona is on Yontif also.
Yeah.
All right. So in terms of kavod and oneg, the Yontif and Shabbos are the same, as the Rambam says. Mm. So why is there more of a concern that he's going to be with his wife on Shabbos and as opposed to on Yontif? Again, that is very difficult. So again, the mitzvah, the minhag only to do it on Yontif is difficult, but the mitzvah to not to do it on Shabbos is even more difficult. So most congregations nowadays do it on Yontif, even if it falls on Shabbos. So on Eretz Yisrael, what happened? So this was only in Ashkenazi communities. Sephardi communities never did this. In all Sephardi communities, they do Birkas Kohanim every day. So
with a full blast and
I. No, not with the I. It's not the I. Weekdays. No, we have to keep the speed
moving.
Going.
Keep it moving.
Okay. They, I don't even know if they do the I's on Yontif. No, what do they do? Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah. I think it's just
basics.
Yeah.
Basics.
So basically in Eretz Yisrael, the established community, the stronger community for many years was the Sephardic Middle Eastern community. So when the Ashkenazim came, they adopted certain things from the Sephardic community, basically. That's a lot of things like that. Like saying Morid Hatal, they adopted from the Sephardic community. But there are places in Eretz Yisrael where Ashkenazim were a little more hesitant in adopting the Sephardic minhag, like in the Galil. In the Galil, the minhag is they only do Birkas Kohanim on Musaf on Shabbos, in addition to Yontif, obviously. Whereas in other places in Eretz Yisrael, they do Birkas Kohanim and Shacharis and Musaf every day, where those are applicable. Yeah.
So that was reasonable. They accepted the Sephardi minhag. I thought because supposedly in Eretz Yisrael you're happy. Question of Simcha being in the Galut.
Well, another influence is the fact that a lot of the Ashkenazi community in Eretz Yisrael, starting in the 19th century, was made up of students of the Vilna Gaon. As well known, the Vilna Gaon was very upset with minhagim that seemed to contradict the halacha of the Gemara. The story is told that the Vilna Gaon said one day, "Okay, I've had it. There's no reason not to duchen every day. Tomorrow, in my private synagogue, we're going to have Birkas Kohanim." So then the shul burned down. That night.
Whoa.
I said, okay, strange, okay. So a few months later, he said, okay, we're going to try again. Tomorrow, in my private shul, in my cloys, we're going to have duchening tomorrow. And again, the shul burned down. So he took this as a sign that some variant of this, you know, there was some, and then Chaim Volozhiner apparently tried to do it once, his student, whatever, he took this as a sign that you don't mess with minhagim, with really entrenched minhagim, even if they seem very difficult. But then the students, when they moved to Eretz Yisrael, they said, hey, we're not in Chutz La'aretz anymore, we can sort of turn over a new leaf, we made aliyah, so we could adhere to what seems to be the basic halacha, which is that the Kohanim are supposed to recite Birkas Kohanim every day. There were a few factors, the influence of the Sephardim and the influence of the Vilna Gaon, but nowadays, in most of Eretz Yisrael, the Ashkenazi community does perform Birkas Kohanim every day.
They didn't surmise that it might be arson?
Well, it happened more than... Well, the first time, yeah, but if it kept happening specifically on the times that the Vilna Gaon decided he wanted to do Birkas Kohanim the next day, so then he decided there couldn't be
anti-Vilna Gaon person.
I don't know. We don't hear stories of people in Vilna being anti-Vilna Gaon, even though he did a lot of what people might have perceived as strange things. Yeah, I know people kept their distance is what the impression that we get. So here in Chutz La'aretz, we have a question. So apparently, the acquaintance of mine who is a Kohen, apparently asked Rav Shechter if he should be makbid, Ashkenazi, if he should be makbid to daven in the Sephardi minyan in YU. So he has a chance to perform Birkas Kohanim every day.
Oh, sweet.
And?
Why not?
And so what was Rav Shechter's answer?
Why not?
Uh-huh. He didn't say you can't, and he didn't say you must, right?
He said you get a mitzvah. Yeah, why not?
You can.
You have a mitzvah. Okay. You have a mitzvah. You get extra brachos, extra mitzvah, so it would seem to be a good idea. Most Ashkenazim are not...
He's less than, you know, David Nusser Ashkenaz, though. We can't, you know, switch his...
When privately, yeah.
Yeah,
I know...
You
can't
go turn chassid on him, you know.
I know Rabbanim also, who come, when they come from Eretz Yisrael, they try to, as much as possible, daven in Sfardi Minyanim, because they get the Birkas Kohanim. So there's no problem with changing the minhag. They always had the minhag like that. So you're daven with them. It's a good idea. It's a good idea. Okay. Fine. Mishor sheha mitzvah shechofetz Hashem betuvo agadol levarech amo Yisrael. Amo al yad hamisharsim achonim tamid beis Hashem. So God wants the Jewish people to be blessed by the people who are always working, who are serving in the house of God. B'chol nachshavdam deveika b'avodasam, v'nafsham kishura b'yiraso kol ayom. So the Kohanim are very focused on God. Again, maybe not anymore, because they don't have the worship in the Beis HaMikdash, but more than most people, Kohanim are focused on God, because they're constantly thinking about serving Him, because they serve in the Beis HaMikdash. So through the merit of the Kohanim, that God is going to be extra inclined to listen to their bracha. So why do you need the Kohanim as an intermediary? Let God just say, hey, I'm going to bless the Jewish people automatically when they deserve it. Why do I need the Kohanim to recite this blessing? That when we do good things, as far as we are good, so will God bless us. So the Sefer HaChinuch has a more rationalistic view of the relationship between God and people in terms of blessings, that a more mystical view might be like, if we do certain things, then that can influence God to, not that we control, obviously, Chalila, but that we can influence God to change His ways and to bless us. But rather, the Sefer HaChinuch's more rational, naturalistic view is that God's blessing is constantly flowing to us, but it's through our behavior and good deeds that we open ourselves up to receive it. So God's shefa, the way He bestows the blessing is constant. It's just a matter of how good we are that shows how good a receptacle we can be, and the more we'll receive the blessing. Balkein ki bachar banu mikol amin v'ratza shadizke betuvo hiziranu v'tzivanu lachin maseidu lachshir gufeinu mitzosav liyoseinu ruyim el hatov. So God's, the whole point of the Torah is the more we observe the Torah, the better we are, and the more we're in a position to receive God's blessing.
גם ציוונו בטובו הגודל לבקש ממנו הברכה, ושנשאל עושה על ידי המשרסים התורים, כי כל זה יהיה זכוס לנפשוסנו, מתוך כך נזכה בטובו. So says the Sefer HaChinuch, it's not the pshat that when the Kohanim go like this, and then they the blessing flows from their fingers from God and through the Kohanim out through their fingers to us, that by virtue of their saying the words, there might be people who understand it that way. But as Sefer HaChinuch's understanding is that asking the Kohanim to bless us is a good action that more opens us up to be able to receive God's blessing. So it's not about the Kohanim channeling the blessing. It's about the fact that we turn to those who serve God and ask them to bless us and ask to latch on to their merit. That is what causes us to be blessed.
That makes sense.
That's the more rationalistic.
Hasidim asking a bracha from a rebbe. It sounds...
Yeah.
Same reasoning.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't think our understanding is as rationalistic as...
Asking a bracha for somebody who can be considered a great person.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, but I hear. I mean, okay, this is an institutionalized mitzvah, but you're right. So if the point of, according to the, if you want to go with this more rationalistic understanding, so then when you go to a great tzaddik to ask for a bracha, it's not that intrinsically he's channeling God's bracha or that he has more power to bless. It's that by virtue of you seeking out an association with a great person, it will improve your character traits and more... make you a proper vessel to receive the blessing of God.
I should have heard this before too. This is good. That's also something that would be applicable to visiting Forest of Kedoshim?
Possibly. Yeah. By going to the to a kever, to a grave, so then you are showing that you are seeking association with this person that you admire Obviously, Chalila, everybody agrees that when you go to a grave, you don't daven to the deceased person. That's problematic. What you could do is you could daven to God in the merit of this person, and by your association with this person, so then you could receive more blessing. That's a good point. Midine hamitzvah. The laws of the mitzvah are as follows. Masha amru zichranam levracha. I mean, your question opens up a whole discussion of intermediaries, and there are certain tefillos that do seem to address intermediaries. Malachei rachamim mishar seyal yon chaluna pnei kel meitav vigayon. Right. That's and everybody is so enamored of that. There are justifications for it, but yeah. Midine hamitzvah masha amru zichranam levracha. She'ein ha-kohanim nosim kapeyam ela ba'asara. You have to have a minyan in order to perform birkas kohanim. Va'kohanim in a minyan. So the kohanim count towards the minyan. So even if you have 8 kohanim, and then you have the chazan, and then you have one person in the audience, so that's good enough. And in fact, not only that, if you have 10 kohanim, they still perform birkas kohanim.
Oh. All right.
So who's the recipient of the bracha? All the Jews who didn't come to shul today.
Again?
All the Jews who didn't come to shul today are the recipients of the bracha.
What about the Jews who did?
No, we're talking about...
If you only have 10 kohanim.
Right, if there are only 10 kohanim in the minyan.
That would happen sometimes, like in the middle of the...
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Like in town, and they're all the same family.
So all the Jews who didn't come to shul, okay.
Yeah.
Because,
that's
very nice.
How was it done? When the chazan starts to recite Ritzei in Chazar Sashatz, when he is about to start, all the kohanim go up to the platform in the front of the shul, ufneim lemula eichal, and they face the Aron HaKodesh, and the backs are facing the people. They go like this. While they're facing the Aron, they go like this. Make fists. Or maybe like this. Never done it. Can't tell you. You're not supposed to spread the fingers until you turn around. You're supposed to go like this.
Sheyashlim shliach tzibur birkas hodos. So then when the shliach tzibur gets to atos shimcha olachanu ela hodos, v'achar kach machazirin peneim kilapei ham, u'poshtim es beotzeim u'magvim gideim kineged kisveim. So they turn around to face the congregation, then they extend their fingers, and they lift the hands to the level of their shoulders. So there are a few details regarding this. So there, first of all, there's a machlokes regarding how the Kohanim are supposed to hold their fingers during the bracha. So a lot of Rishon in the Vilnagon, I think, agrees to this. Doesn't say anything about the, you know, Spock thing. You know, the this is, but rather, you just spread the fingers. They just go like that. You just spread them all out. So other Rishonim say you're supposed to make five. For next time, I forget the reason why. You're supposed to make five spaces. So you have a space here, a space here, but and then between the hands, then here and here. So you have five spaces. What?
That's three.
What?
That's three.
One? No. You have a little space here in the middle also. You don't touch. What? You don't touch the hands. You just go like that.
Oh, like that. One, two, three.
That's so, seven. No, like this.
Sorry. Well, I still only getting...
That's a normal minnag.
Now I'm getting three.
What?
Three. There's three spaces.
One, two, three, four, five.
What?
There's one between the thumbs.
Yeah.
Oh.
What do you mean?
The hands aren't touching.
Not a coin.
Yeah. Right. So either way, your Yotze, don't worry about it. Too much, and no one here is a coin. So no one's ever going to do this anyway. So fine. Let's let the Kohanim worry about how exactly they're going to hold their fingers. Another thing is that it's very important to keep in mind that the hands are supposed to be at shoulder level. So you see a lot of Kohanim, especially if they are more elderly. It's hard for them to. And the talus is heavy, right? So it's hard for them to hold the hands so high. So it's a problem. So. They can take breaks. Well, they're not actually saying the words. They should let their hands, arms relax. But it really is a problem. You see, Kohanim, they're just holding their hands over here, and that's the Shaila of the Bracha Levatola. Mm-hmm. Now, because they're not Yotzei the Mitzvah.
They have to be standing up.
So that's a problem. You should make sure that the Kohanim know that they have to keep their hands at shoulder level.
Can I ask you, is this connected in some manner with the occasion when... we were fighting Amalek, and Moshe was lifting his hands and being supported that hands should be raised, and that was...
Well, it doesn't say how high Moshe raised his hands, right?
No, but is this question of duchening, is there some way connected with that action, that activity? Is there...
famously, the Mishnah says regarding that the reason... It wasn't that Moshe's hands were like a magical charm, that when they were like this, they won the war, and when they were like this, they started losing. But rather, it's indicative of the fact that when Moshe's hands were raised, so people would look at Moshe, and they would say, oh, his hands are raised. We're supposed to think about God. So they were thinking about God, and they would win the war, and when they weren't thinking about God, they would lose the war. So raising hands, you know, indicates, let's turn our attention to a higher power. Okay, yeah. Could be connected, yeah. And then you have the issue of the talus. So somebody mentioned the talus being heavy. So the minag nowadays is that the Kohanim keep their hands inside the talus while they perform Birkas Kohanim. Some poskim have only gone... Say that the hands should specifically be outside the talus. So if you just have the talus over your head and then you have the hands like this, so then it's not as heavy. But with the minhag nowadays, the talus is extended all the way over the hands, then it could make things heavier depending on how heavy the wool of your talus is. So we have the rule, speaking of the talus covering the hands. We have the rule that you're not supposed to stare at the hands of the Kohanim while they're giving the bracha. So for that reason, people pull the talus all the way over their heads, or they look away, or whatever, so they shouldn't stare at the Kohanim's hands. So first of all, according to the halacha, technically, you are allowed to glance at the Kohanim's hands. And people think that... that when the Kohanim are giving the brachas, so that the bracha rays are coming out of their hands, and if you look at the Kohanim's hands, the bracha rays are going to hit you in the eye, and it's going to cause damage. So that's not, and halacha says explicitly that you are allowed to glance at the hands of the Kohanim, you're just not allowed to stare. And second of all, If the Kohanim have their hands under the talis, you can't see their hands anyway.
The
talis stops the bracha rays, right? So even so, there's no reason that you can't look at the Kohanim's hands, certainly if they're under a talis. But you see from the fact that you have this akpada is that it seems to be that the older practice was that the hands would be outside the talis and not inside the talis, but the normal minhag nowadays is that they're inside the talis. So you have a problem. So if you look away, or you put your talis over your head, over your eyes, and you don't want to look at all the Kohanim's hands, it's not a problem per se. But in the olden days, apparently, I haven't seen anyone do this, but Sammy told me that in the shul when he was growing up, younger, so there were people who used to do this, that when the Kohanim were duchening, they used to turn around.
Oh, yeah.
They face their backs to the Kohanim in order to prevent any accidental possibility that they might glance at the hands under the talis and get any damage that might be caused by the Kohanim's hands. So the problem is that this is completely against the halacha. The halacha says that part of the Tzura, the way that Birkas Kohanim is performed, that it's supposed to be panim keneged panim, amor lahem. That when it says that the way the bracha says that the Kohanim should say these words to the Jewish people, amor lahem. So the Gemara learns out from this that it's supposed to be recited facing each other as if they were having a conversation. So when you have someone turn around completely, then that really is a problem, and that should not be done. Sammy told me that Rabbi Weinberg one year gave a drasha, his drasha that Yantid morning, you know, his drashas were 45 minutes long, whatever. The entire drasha was hounding again and again that women, it could be men also, but apparently it's mostly women who were doing this, because the men had the talis they could prevent, put over their eyes. But he gave his whole lengthy drasha hounding, you cannot turn around during Birkas Kohanim, you have to face the Kohanim, it's against the halacha, nothing's going to happen, don't worry, you have to face the Kohanim. But he said 5 minutes later during Chazar Sashatz, the whole women's section whew, turned around just like usual. So unfortunately, the power of habit, the power of superstitious worries.